You're listening to the B-Fox and B-Frank show, and Houston is your new number one team in the country. Purdue has lost to Ohio State. UConn has lost to Creighton. So let's start with the Cougars. Slow start to their first season of Big 12 play, as we talked about, but they have righted the ship very nicely and now have a lead in the conference over Iowa State and Kansas. And of course, as I said, number one in the country as well. They have won five in a row since losing at Allen Fieldhouse, including a huge week of two wins over Iowa State on the road at Baylor. It's the same kind of team that we thought they were in terms of they have such a strong swarming defense, especially on the perimeter. You can certainly ask some questions about where the scoring is going to come from, if they absolutely have to have it, if they're playing a team that is going off. You know, you've got Shedd and Cryer in the backcourt who have been doing a pretty solid job, but that's really the only question mark you would have from Houston at this point, because you know, they can really muck it up. That's what the Iowa State game largely was. Two really good defensive teams, both struggling to score. And that would be the one area of concern if you're a Houston fan, because really no team this year is head and shoulders above the rest. But have to give credit, Houston is playing the best basketball out of most teams nationally. And, you know, pretty deserving number one team right now.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I think the biggest eye-opener was the first half against Baylor. Granted, you could argue that everything good they did in the first half, they gave away in the second half to get it to overtime. But their defense in that overtime period was stifling. It was swarming. To see Francis playing as physically as he was, as assertively as he was, in the paint with four fouls through the entirety of overtime, got them that win. They're going to need their guards to score. Like, it's that simple. Their guards run everything. This is a fairly typical Houston team that we're used to seeing, and guard play will dictate how far they can go. Defensively, they're going to be solid. The bench leaves a little bit to be desired. But I think overall, they just force you into so many tough shots in general that it's very hard to get into your offensive rhythm, as we saw with Baylor. It took until the second half where they started to hit. I think they started like 4 of 6 from three in the second half, and that's what got them going. And I mean, that gets any team going, right? Like, anytime you're able to hit a number of your shots to open a half, it changes the game. But credit to Houston overall, just sticking with the game plan, finding ways to get buckets late, and then continuing to play that strong defense. I think they forced 19 Baylor turnovers, which is quite a number, especially considering 8 of them, as I'm pulling up the stats, were from Ray J. Dennis, who has been sensational this year.
Yeah, forced 16 against Iowa State as well. And yeah, that's really their MO, just that swarming perimeter defense. And on the inside, Roberts has done a good job of kind of filling that void that Walker left when he went to the NBA and joined the Pacers, 17-8 against Baylor. But yeah, I mean, if you're playing Houston, get ready for an absolute war. They are as physical as they've ever been. And I think the ceiling this year does seem to be a little higher because, you know, they went out and added Cryer from Baylor, gives them a little more offensively. It's just the question you ask yourself is, you know, do they have the guard play to lead them to a national championship? They might, but there are going to be some serious questions about pretty much every team going to March Madness. And I am truly fascinated as to who is going to be able to win 6 games in a row out of the field. But I mean, Houston could, but
yeah. Yeah. It's funny too, because I think Baylor's actually pretty similar, aside from like the stifling defense. Baylor's defense, as we've talked about all year, has been very up and down, but it is very much the same feast or famine for each of them. Like, you can get good games out of guys like Jalen Bridges for Baylor. You can get big games from Francis, from Roberts, if you are Houston, but it is your guard play that takes you as far as you can go with these groups.
Yeah, and that's why some would not believe in Purdue. I would never be one of those people, but Zach Edey is not a guard. So something worth pointing out. Who did you have as a winner from last week?
I did not have many. I was a big time hater. It was a great time to be a hater in college basketball, that's for sure. But I did go with an unlikely frenemy, and that's St. John's.
Okay.
The Johnnies bouncing back after just a really tough stretch. They narrowly defeat Georgetown, almost blowing another double-digit first-half lead. That is not the game I want to talk about. It is the win over Creighton in the Sunday matinee, 80-66. The Jays coming off of that win, as we mentioned, over UConn in dominating fashion. And then they go on the road to Madison Square Garden, lay an absolute egg in this one. And this was an enormous win to keep St. John's season alive. A couple things it does is it keeps them in the hunt overall for an NCAA tournament bid. They most likely have to win out, and I don't know that beating Butler tomorrow as you're listening, or today as you're listening, excuse me, tomorrow as we record, is going to do it, because the Bulldogs are struggling right now. They've got DePaul and Georgetown to close the season. If they can win those games big, I think they get a look. I don't know how much it does, but if nothing else, they win those three. They're on a 5-game winning streak heading into home court Madison Square Garden for the Big East tournament.
Yeah, and then I would say you have to win your at first least, game there, yeah, because that would be whoever they play, that'd be a pretty bad loss if they stumble. But yeah, I mean, this was exactly what the doctor ordered. We kind of took a look at their schedule the last show. You're like, you know, there are certainly some winnable games here, playing Georgetown twice, going up against DePaul, but Creighton is one that is a really big opportunity, especially coming off a win over UConn. And I mean, St. John's absolutely answered the bell. Iconic white suit for Rick Pitino. Yep. Like, you could not waste that game. And I'm glad for his sake that they did not. Just Colonel Sanders himself just looking sharp as hell. But yeah, this was very much needed. And it's just kind of been the pattern of the season. Like, Pitino has gone off multiple times. I don't think any times as severely or as critical of individual members of his team as after the Seton Hall game. But, mm-hmm. you know, it took a couple of games, but you certainly saw a response in this one from St. John. So you would, if you're a fan, you would hope and expect they keep it going. It really comes down to the Butler game. If they can get a win at Hinkle, I would feel pretty confident about the rest of the season and, you know, playing their way into the field potentially.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think a couple things from this game as well, like Danis Jenkins is very, very good. I think we're continuing to see that as he evolves as an overall player and a high quality scorer, but it's also how important the complementary pieces are. Getting 10 rebounds, 6 assists from Glenn Taylor is enormous. Getting 18 points from Jordan Dingle, a guy who has really struggled to find his footing in the Big East, is enormous. Just having something off the bench that you can point to. Simeon Wiltshire, a freshman, had 6 points. Naheem Aline had 4. Like, they're small contributions, but they are things that allow Rick Pitino to not play 40 minutes up and down with his starting five, because he can trust other guys to actually get something done.
And playing some defense too, like, yeah, Shireman and Ashworth combined 2 for 16 from 3. Like, mm-hmm. you can keep Creighton from doing what they love to do more than anything else in the world. That's a recipe for success. So again, the defense side, I don't know how sustainable that is. So you've kind of seen that's been a roller coaster all year, but getting contributions from more guys on your team, that's certainly something that St. John's can build on.
Yeah. It's going to be great too. You get Creighton shoots 6 of 26 against St. John's, 13 turnovers. You know, it's not going to be like that next game. And guess who they play next?
Seton Hall.
You better believe it.
I had Wake Forest. Pretty eventful week. The Demon Deacons blew out Pitt, who is hanging right around the bubble, and then got a huge win over Duke that could and should safely put Wake Forest into the field. I believe they have not made the just been in the round of 64 since something like 2010. And Hunter Salas continues to be just the next great reclamation project coming over from Gonzaga. He was excellent against Pitt, had 29 points on 11 of 13 shooting against Duke. And that was kind of the resume boosting win they so desperately needed, because there are just very few of those you can get in the ACC. So I think right now Wake's got to be in the field, and you know, hopefully they don't screw that up.
Yeah, it's a big win, no doubt about it. This is their first tournament appearance, as we're getting research on it. They were in the first four, as you mentioned, 2016-17. This is their first time in the round of 64 since, I think you're right, 2009-2010, when they won a game in the NCAA tournament over Texas and then lost to Kentucky by a million. Yeah. Salas was awesome in this game. What did he start? Like 9 of 9 from the field, just could not miss in the first half. And Efton Reed played a very solid game defensively in the paint, just trying to limit Filipowski inside, and also just Duke's penetrating drives that they love to get ball movement and open shots off of. It was a very fun game, a really fun environment overall. Wake Forest desperately needed this one. Their resume is fairly light on wins that you can point to. They have Florida. They have a win over Virginia, which I don't know how much that should really count for. And then they've got Duke. And down the stretch, they really don't have many other opportunities. They're at Notre Dame, at Virginia Tech, then home for Georgia Tech, who is the absolute spoiler of all spoilers this year in the ACC, and Clemson, who is a team I still cannot get a handle on. But they needed this. They got the win, and their road record be damned. I think they will probably make the NCAA tournament.
Georgia Tech has been a giant killer, but you know, maybe the consolation is Wake Forest isn't really a giant. So
yeah.
Less cause for concern than there would normally be.
Yeah, I really do think that the Virginia Tech game is probably the scariest one left on the schedule. A home loss to Clemson doesn't kill you, but Virginia Tech is just in that range enough where it's a questionable game.
Yeah, and they're certainly a team that can really get cooking at home.
Yeah,
and put some points on the board. I have a couple more. I've got. Another shout out for Loyola. They are tied for first with Richmond, and they just absolutely beat down a George Mason team who is coming off a win over Dayton. Mm-hmm. Which is my favorite part of this is just my dad went to Loyola, so this is probably partially why I think this, but Loyola just feels like every dad's second favorite program. Just the way that at their peak under Porter Moser, they would share the ball, you know, run mm-hmm. through Cameron Krutwig in the high post, and then you drop 80 points on George Mason. You have two guys in double figures with 10 points each, and you score 80 as a team. That is just chef's kiss of sharing the ball and just everyone on the roster contributing and really not giving the defense any opportunity to take anyone lightly. And I thought that was just a picturesque illustration of what Loyola at its best can do to teams.
Yeah, they've been maybe the biggest surprise in major college basketball. I would put them, you know, in that mid-major plus range. The A-10 is one of those leagues that can compete with a number of different leagues to say that they are good enough. And they and Richmond probably have been the two biggest surprises, and there's no reason that they should not be sitting atop the league, 12-2, just ahead of Dayton, and 20-7 overall. It is disappointing overall for these teams that they really have no shot at an at-large bid just because of how the non-conference shook out. You can't lose to UIC if you are Loyola and expect to get in the field. Looking back, their losses outside of Tulsa as well are not that bad. It's just they have no quality wins to point to at this point. But you're right. I think every Chicago or Chicago adjacent, Chicago land father loves Loyola basketball because it is the profound use of the pivot foot, superb shuffling the feet of on defense, just a lot of active hands and activity on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, and I mean, huge for Drew Valentine, too. Now, finally, like, establishing himself this season as a pretty damn good coach for a team that I think was picked eighth in the preseason, coming off a really poor season in the A-10 last year.
Yeah.
Great bounce back. And, yeah, it is unfortunate that we're going to get max of two teams in the A-10 in the tournament, but I think it's pretty easy to say, you know, all three of these teams are capable of winning the game in the tournament. This is a better Richmond team than the one that beat Iowa in the first round a couple of years ago. And, you know, Dayton's certainly capable with Holmes, and Loyola just keeps winning. It's just tough. The A-10 this year, there aren't really opportunities to get enough wins to sort of play your way into the field as an at-large, as we're kind of seeing South Florida looks like they have been able to do in the American. But yeah, it's just not enough opportunities. The avoiding losses is good, but it's hard to kind of fully cancel out anything that might have happened in the non-conference.
Yeah. If you are Drew Valentine and DePaul calls, what are you saying?
I think I say no, but right. That's tough. It's I don't know. I think for a lot of coaches, like, the appeal of DePaul is, you know, obviously being in the Big East, but also being in Chicago.
Yeah.
Drew Valentine's in a different part of Chicago, but he's still already in the city. Like, you still have the same recruiting base. And to this point, DePaul isn't really stealing any players from Loyola. I don't know. That's a tough one. I could see coaches coming from better programs than Loyola to DePaul, but when you're already in Chicago, that's tough, because I feel like that is a selling point, and they're getting better atmospheres at the Gentile as it is than whatever's happening at Wintrust.
Yeah, it's I would agree with that. And I think part of it too, and granted, this is maybe an unfair statement just given the last couple of years under Stubblefield and then the end of our dear friend Dave Leto, but like, there's seemingly such a bigger commitment to basketball right now for Loyola than DePaul. That's not to say DePaul would not invest. Like, they're building a new practice facility, which is obviously a huge step forward, but it's like, from the NIL perspective, from the alumni perspective, how invested are those people in the success of the men's basketball program? I mean, even the women's team is bad this year, and it's like, you don't really hear about it. You don't hear a peep, because there's just seemingly no, like, just everyone is just tired at DePaul.
Yeah. I mean, you have to be just an absolute psycho to be a Division I coach in this landscape to begin with. But whoever takes the DePaul job is someone who's going to have a ton of energy. Like, it's going to be a full scale rebuild from the ground up. And I don't know. I think it's one of those things where I'm going to feel optimistic about whoever they decide to bring in, but that's assuming they get a sitting head coach, someone who's already had some success. Yeah. You know, Stubblefield started off well out of the gate, but when he was hired, I don't think anyone was like, this is the guy they had to have.
Incredibly uninspiring. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would expect DePaul, you know, takes a bigger swing this time. They kind of have to. You're
Kenny Payne?
That would be funny. no, they like he will be fired by the time they hire a coach, probably.
So yeah,
he will excuse himself as not being sitting. But yeah, I mean, even like a Bobby Hurley, talk about somebody who has energy.
Right.
That's that I would feel good about. But yeah, I don't know. It's bleak. It's as bleak as it's been, which is really saying something.
Yeah, I mean, and on the Bobby Hurley point too, he at least brought some energy to Arizona State. Like it was a very quiet, floundering program for a bit, and he came in and kind of re-energized folks. And hey, he got ninth in the AP poll this week. So credit to Arizona State.
That was big and deserved. Yeah, big win over Washington State. Transitive win over Arizona this week.
Huge.
Yeah. I mean, he's had success at both stops, not having a great year, great last couple of years. But I mean, he's got data points on his resume that a school like DePaul would be crazy to overlook.
Yeah, no doubt.
I've got one more. Do you have any other winners on your end?
I just have one shout out, and it's our dear friends, the Delta Devils of Mississippi Valley State. They are finally on the board. A 57-51 win over Prairie View. This is a 10-win Prairie View team, so it is no pushover that they got the win against. So credit to our friends down in the SWAC. A nice home win as well. The students got to storm the court, so take that, Jay Billis. College basketball is fun.
Yeah. I thought about talking about that in Wake Forest section. I have thoughts for the loser section. But yeah, that's a big win. So now everybody has a win. Detroit was able to get off the schneid a little bit ago against Ooey Pooey and Mississippi Valley State. So it's big.
Huge.
They will both probably stay at one win till the end of the season, but that is a hell of a lot better than just having a goose egg there.
Infinitely more than zero.
Yeah. My last one, Gonzaga, might be back.
They might.
You talk about how much more fun it might be if Salas and Reed were not at Wake Forest and were still at Gonzaga. Could be a deeper team. Who knows? But six straight wins going into a massive, massive week. Road games with San Francisco and St. Mary's, which should Gonzaga be able to sweep those? I don't think they will. But if they are able to, that would really improve their potential seed line. As it is, I think they're probably the most optimistic projections would probably have them as like a 10 or 11 seed, even though they are back into the top 25. I don't think that ranking really jives with kind of their projected seeds, but the offense looks as good as it has in a very long time. Ike looks as good as he has in a very long time. He had 20-14 against Portland, 26-7 as they avenged the earlier loss to Santa Clara pretty comfortably. So not dead yet. I would point to pretty alive with a big opportunity of a week here. And without knowing what the bracket looks like so far, obviously, I know that I am going to be very tempted to just automatically put them in the Sweet 16 for like the ninth straight year, whatever it'll be. It has happened before, so I think it's going to happen again.
There is precedent there.
Yeah.
But I mean, if they get in as 11, like you've got to like the opportunity against BYU, Texas Tech, Washington State. Like those are solid teams, but they've got a real chance to win games against teams like that. And then it's 11, they play the three,
like a Duke or something.
Duke, Alabama, Iowa State. Like those are teams. Iowa State might be the toughest of that. Well, Baylor's in that group as well, so Baylor's probably the toughest of that group. But like Gonzaga and Duke, that's a pretty good round of 32 matchup. We're gonna talk about Duke in a little bit. I'm not convinced Duke is a good basketball team. I think they're incredibly talented, but I don't know that they're a good basketball team.
We're done with winners, so we might as well. Let's hear it.
They have one win. like they beat Baylor and congrats, that's a good win. But like everything else they have, I mean, are you going to put to the 24 point win over Charlotte as their next best win? Because it's certainly not Michigan State, because Michigan State has been up and down all season long. You can look at Clemson, maybe Wake Forest, I guess, is up there now. But like outside of their name and the talent on the roster, what has Duke done to deserve to be a basically top 10 team all season long?
And who really even remembers the Baylor win? Because I sure don't.
Yeah.
I guess it wasn't as long ago as I thought it might be. But yeah, I mean, the back-to-back losses to Arkansas, who is terrible, and Georgia Tech, yeah, who is also terrible. I mean, it's not like they've been racking up high-level wins in the ACC. They had their opportunity at North Carolina, fell short. They'll obviously have another opportunity, but yeah, it's a whole lot of nothing for the most part. Like the tournament teams would probably be Wake Forest and maybe Clemson, Virginia Tech. They beat Pitt once, lost to Pitt once. They'll probably be on the bubble. I don't know how to feel about Syracuse. Syracuse might sneak in, but it's all teams that would just, you know, feel happy to be in the field if mm-hmm. they make it. Not really any that would be complaining about their seed line too much. So, yeah, I'm with you. They're doing their best to try to be hateable again, because it just,
they are.
For me, I just didn't feel it. I couldn't in my heart of hearts. I love John Shire so much as a player. He's also not Coach K. So those two things working in tandem, the lot for him. And then we had the incident Saturday, where there was a court storming. It was wild. It's like, these alternate angles, just people have been sitting on them for too long, and it seems like exclusively just for, you know, breaking down court storming incidents like Zapruder film. Like we saw what happened with Caitlin Clark earlier in the season, which patently ridiculous. It's crazy that no one in media like walked that back or toned down the rhetoric at all for a, like, it was someone like so far out of the fray that Caitlin Clark ran into, spun around and flopped, like, and then tried to keep it going at the press conference. This was fairly similar. Granted, I can understand how it looked a lot worse initially because it was closer to the middle of the court where there's going to be an onrush of students coming on. But then the alternate angle, we kind of see what happened with the, Filipowski kind of initiating it and then just going down in the heap. And like you
got,
you
the
see
LeBron Book Knight carry off the floor.
You see the aftermath and you're like, oh my God, this is it. Like he tore his ACL or something. It was his knee, it was his ankle. Now it's just general soreness. So a whole lot of nothing. Same thing. Press conference, like, oh my God, that felt like a targeted attack, just ignoring the sequence of who touched who. And everyone in media, just not everyone, but a lot of the
right
people who have the most eyes on them, you know, on ESPN primarily, would say just losing their minds. You know, Jay Billis, Seth Davis, don't look up where they went to school, but they have been kind of the loudest and craziest about it. Bill is saying we should just arrest or detain everyone who steps foot on the court. Why are people like this? Why can college students not have fun? Why is it's like, you kind of, people are talking about, it's like, how do we do this safely? Every court storm for the last 40 years has resulted in like zero injuries to players. So like, look at any of those. I don't know what to tell you.
There are a couple of things too that you bring up. The biggest one to me is You're down by four with a second left. You have zero chance of staying in this game. Why is Filipowski on the floor? You can see that all of these students are getting ready to rush onto the floor. I get that you have to play it out and as if he's going to catch, you know, someone's going to catch and shoot and score. But are you not just assuming that he's either going to be guarded by the biggest guy on the floor or double teamed at this point? Like, there's no world in which Filipowski is getting a shot off, right? You're forcing someone else to shoot the ball. And like the fact that he's on the far side of the floor instead of the near side, closer to the bench to get out of there when you know that people are on rushing is just insane. The other point is it's the tweet, and I can't remember who had it. It's like, it seems like all the popular sportscasters are just there because they are just there to hate on the fans of the sport and not actually talk about the sport itself.
Yeah. No, like, they,
why do you care?
Yeah. I mean, it's like it's almost like the reverse of that great KD tweets. Like, every NBA fan just hates everything about the NBA.
Yeah.
Like that. And it's like so many in college basketball media just like do not like the fans or like look down upon the fans. And it's like, it is at its core, it is a fun experience. Like we are painting this as the only reason that students want to run onto a court is just to take out a crowbar and just go for the knees of every opposing player. When in reality, this is pure joy. My team just won a significant game, whether it be against a highly ranked opponent, a rival, snapping some sort of streak. And we're trying to celebrate that. And instead, what we have is the Caitlin Clarks of the world, the Dukes of the world, shifting focus away from that and changing the narrative, basically, so we don't have to talk about how they got their ass beat, because that wasn't the post-game conversation at all anymore. It's like, students are evil, court stormers are just ravenous madmen just trying to assault people, which is just simply not the case.
And if it's a player safety thing, then why aren't we going down the rabbit hole of playing above hockey rinks? Like, that causes more injuries than court stormings every single year.
Yeah. Yeah, and like there are things you can do. Like I saw, I think it was Creighton, it had like the wall of security to kind of get UConn team out of there. It's like,
yeah,
if we're going to do that, like that's something that I don't think is too difficult to implement. But you also have to pair that with players who are trying to get out of the off the floor and
not
kind of looking to start something. But yeah, I don't know. I have no problem with court storming. I have never participated in it. I was a year too late, but it looks fun. And I know Titus has said this. If you want a court storm after every single win, no matter how big or small, go for it. It doesn't matter.
Someone just did it a couple of days or a couple of weeks ago, and they were the ranked team that won. I can't remember who the hell it was. It was hilarious, though.
Well, that's the thing, too. Like, everyone being like, how can we do this safely? It's like, there have been court storms that have happened since this incident. You're bemoaning that. It's like, they have gone off with that incident. So, we're choosing to ignore these to argue in complete bad faith, which is just very disappointing.
Yeah.
I'm just disappointed. Like, no one on major networks is really saying much. Like, Richard Jefferson's the one guy I've kind of seen, but he's not a college basketball
analyst,
technically. Like, nobody on game day is speaking up when Jay Billis is saying some insane shit. And it's like, what are you talking about?
I mean, to be fair, they've just got such strong personalities on college game day for basketball that, they're always going to go toe-to-toe with Jay Billis.
Yeah, I hope for too much. I know. So Duke is bad. Virginia also not great. One of these games was a win over Wake Forest, I should say, but in their last three games, 134 total points, 8 made three-pointers. They are now 14th in the ACC in offensive efficiency. Yes, below Louisville, only ahead of Notre Dame, who is really not an ACC roster, to put it mildly, in Shrewsbury's first year. Like any other season, he's going to have something cooking. He's getting a free pass for this season. Virginia is not. But once again, Tony Bennett, nobody does it better. They are backer than back. It is an absolute chore to watch them again. The only hope they have is just to drag teams down to their depths, which they did against Wake Forest. I think it was a 49-47 final or something, just truly disgusting. It's just the pregame over-unders will always look so tempting. Do you forget that Max, one of these teams actually plays basketball and the other is Virginia? There are no depths they cannot reasonably reach.
They, in this North Carolina game, shot 27%, 27.6. I'm not going to take away that from them. 14.3% from three, six turnovers. It took them 17 minutes to score their 10th point of the game.
Yeah.
How is that possible? To their credit, they shut down North Carolina. It was only 21-10. It was a football score with 3 minutes left in that first half. And I mean, if it wasn't for a couple of made baskets late, they were going to lose this game by 20, and North Carolina was going to barely break 50.
Yeah, Virginia should not have broken 40. I was out watching that game next to a table of Virginia people who I didn't realize until it was far too late. But the two TVs side by side were Kentucky, Alabama, Virginia, North Carolina, just not even close to the same sport. And it just, like, you would know just watching North Carolina, Virginia, this is bad basketball, but just juxtaposed like that, it really made it sink in even more. And yeah, I am looking forward to the first round upset from whoever. I don't have a leading candidate yet, but it could be the fight in Will Wade's, could be Grand Canyon, could be any team with the pulse, really.
Samford would be great to see them run up like 75 or 80 points.
Yeah, because they're same conference that did it last year.
Yeah. Just keep that rolling.
Yeah.
New Mexico. You cannot, and you know, no one respects the troops more than us. You can't lose to Air Force in basketball at home and have at-large hopes for the NCAA tournament. Does this kill their at-large hopes? No, but it greatly hampers them. And now they really need to play basically perfect basketball down the stretch to stay in the tournament field, because really just the game at Utah State is going to provide them an opportunity to improve their resume. And I don't know that they will be able to win that one with the way they've played over the last couple of weeks. They are, 4-4 in their last eight? Granted, they've already lost to Boise State, who they play on Saturday. San Diego State is a solid team, but they've lost to UNLV, who's been frisky, and now this Air Force team, who is bad.
Yeah, I mean, they've alternated wins and losses for a month, which, if trends continue, they will pick up road wins over Boise and Utah State, but also pick up a home loss to Fresno, so hard to say whether that's good or bad. It's so disappointing, because the win last week was an instant classic against Colorado State, who I will just mention in passing is a loser, as they are now in seventh in the Mountain West and fading fast. But that was an elite, like, last 3 minutes of the game. I don't really know what was happening before, because it was not super high scoring, but it just seemed like neither team missed until Dent. Yeah. Had the game-winning layup to win it for the Lobos. But yeah, this is bad when you're losing to the troops. And worse for Tim Miles, because now he is behind the troops in the standings of the Mountain West. That was a great way to kill any momentum from the week.
Yeah, and I think Air Force had lost something like six or seven straight heading into that one, and 14 or 15 of their last 17. So yikes. But
yeah,
all is not lost. Yeah, all is not lost, I would say, for New Mexico. They have given themselves a horrible sit. They've dug themselves a hole with no need to do so.
Yeah. At least they lost Air Force by less than UNLV did, which was roughly 1 million. My last one is Texas A&M, who should not be in the field, but they might be.
Agreed.
And I know that if they are left out, Buzz Williams will have an aneurysm, even though, you know, he kind of brought it on himself, because they have now lost four straight to kind of two groups of teams. They've lost to just abhorrently bad teams in Vanderbilt and Arkansas. And then they played a couple good teams in Alabama and Tennessee, and they lost those games by a combined 60 points. So they are clearly not on the level of a good basketball team. They're not really on the level of a bad basketball team or teams. So I really don't – well, I guess the reason they're still kind of in the running is they do have three or four quad one wins, but bad losses are piling up too. And they are barely above 500. So when I watch Texas A&M play, I do not think that they are an NCAA tournament team. And
no,
it is one of the many reasons why I'm confused, why there is still so much clamoring to expand the field, because if this is a team that is comfortably in the tournament, we are in the dark times for sure. But yeah, I like Wade Taylor's a great player. I don't love a lot else about this roster. And they're 2-4 in quad three games. Like that should be enough right there.
I don't know that they win another game this year. I'm going to be bold and say it. South Carolina is a much better team. Granted, it will be a road game for the Gamecocks. Mississippi State, I think, can give this team a lot of trouble overall, just with how they play defense, and then their guards can score pretty well. At Georgia's the best chance, but I don't think they win at Ole Miss. Like, I think that Ole Miss isn't a great team, but they are good enough, and I think that Chris Beard is a better coach than Buzz. And so I think there's a legit chance that they lose out to finish this season and then end up with a losing record.
Yeah, it is tough because, like, all of those teams except for Georgia are sort of on fraud watch.
Yeah.
So somebody's going to have to win. But, yeah, I mean, the way A&M's playing, it's hard to have any confidence in them, especially the way that they've looked against tournament teams. And I think for all of their faults, South Carolina, Ole Miss, certainly still in the field, although Ole Miss won't be a particularly good seed.
Yeah.
And Mississippi State, I don't think is completely dead yet. So, yeah, I mean that would put them at having a losing record, and I think there would be some belly aching should they be left out of the field.
I mean, actually, good.
That's what's going to happen. They're going to lose out. So that would be 8 in a row to end the year.
Yeah.
Then they would win. I don't know where that would put them in the standings, but they'd win maybe 3 games to get to the SEC championship game, lose, and then we have this conversation all over again.
No,
it's like they almost beat Kentucky or whoever in the final. They should be in. It's like, well, the rest of the season sucked. So
yeah, they have 4 quad 3 losses, and the only reason it's 4 is because one of their losses bumped up after they lost the game. They effectively helped themselves by making the opponent a quad 2 game. Might have been, I actually have no idea who it was off the top, but that's all I remember, and that is more than enough for me to say that this team does not belong anywhere near the NCAA tournament.
I am curious now. Quad 3. Okay, so Vanderbilt, Arkansas were certainly them. LSU.
Who are the quad two losses?
I mean, Vanderbilt's really close to being a quad 4.
Yeah. Quad 2. Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah, I mean,
Vanderbilt beating them knocked Vanderbilt or moved Vanderbilt up into a quad three game instead of a quad four. That might be what it was.
I think it might be. I forget what the rules exactly are. I'm probably the worst person to ask this. But Arkansas on the road is a quad two loss. That's probably pretty close to being a quad
three. Yeah, that could be it too.
Yeah, so
remarkable.
Good times all around. Yeah. I mean everything remaining is quad two and above.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, it's not really surprising, but yeah, it's nobody does it better. Just hanging out in this part of the bubble. Even though I think at this point they should be firmly out with work to do. But once again, it is not up to me.
Yeah, unfortunately. I unfortunately have to add this team. It's someone we've already spoken about, but it is DePaul. Absolutely heartbreaking loss to Georgetown. A missed layup at the buzzer. Really a great opportunity. A nice comeback in this game. There was energy in Wintrust Arena for the first time in a long time. And DePaul had a lead late in the game. They had a lead in the final 4 minutes of the game. They just could not find a way to close it out. They actually were up in the final 26 seconds before they fouled Jaden Epps, and he hit a couple free throws, and then there was the missed layup at the end. But that was their chance for a win in the Big East. These two teams came in and combined 1-29, and the only win was against one another. Georgetown beat DePaul in a tight one in DC, and now they win a tight one in Chicago. And yeah, it's a sad day.
Yeah, it was bad. And I mean, Goodman's tweet afterwards was laugh out loud funny. As Georgetown knocks off DePaul, which,
yep,
that's one way of phrasing that. And that is like, Cooley has already tied the total number of conference wins the Hoyas accumulated over the previous two seasons, and four more opportunities in Big East play, which LOL. But also, yeah, like, you could also say he has half the wins in like almost a full season that Patrick Ewing had in one weekend in New York. So
yeah,
that's all-time spin zone. Nobody carries water better.
No one.
For coaches that you should distance yourself from post haste. Not unlike Chris Holtman when he was employed.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That is our last show until March. Next week it'll be March, and we are that much closer to the tournament. Just a couple more weeks of the regular season for the Power Six. Some of the smaller conferences will be starting their tournaments very soon. And we get closer and closer to the most wonderful time of the year. So we'll start talking about that in earnest, and we'll see you next time.